Hello, welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined by Todd Rosiak. He is the Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's on the other line. He was in Cincinnati watching the Brewers take 2 of 3 from the Reds. Fourth game got rained out. And then the Brewers went to Baltimore and won 2 of 3 there as well against, I think, a team a lot of people consider to be the best or one of the best in the American League, and had a lead late on Sunday against Corbin Burns. Couldn't pull that one out. Didn't win on Sunday, but a tremendous showing. The offense has been awesome. They went a string of 6 straight games scoring 7 or more runs. That's only been done 2 other times in franchise history, going back to 1989, the last time that happened. I think, Todd, the obvious question is, I mean, it's only 2 weeks, but what's real, what's not, when you see a team that just tears the cover off the ball and it's different guys, it's not just one or two guys totally tearing it up. And we'll talk about Christian Yelich and his back injury or missing these last couple games, but he's on fire. Blake Perkins is on fire. Bryce Turang is on fire. Some of this is going to come back to earth, but it sure is an impressive start. 10-4, best record in the National League. What parts of this do you look at and say, okay, this is actually maybe their identity, that's who they are? And which parts of this do you sit back and say, okay, let's slow down a little bit? This guy isn't going to be this good. This guy's going to be this good. There's still the hurdles to climb. Where do you fall when you watch this team?
Not to pat myself on the back, but I did say going into the season that, you know, my belief was that it was going to have to be the bullpen, the offense, and the defense to kind of combine to carry this team this year with the starting pitching picture the way that it was. And so far, that's really kind of been the formula. I will say that I expected, even though Rhys Hoskins has been good so far, Rhys Hoskins and Gary Sanchez, the way they lengthen that lineup out, I thought was going to be a big factor. And there have been days, especially the last couple days with Gary Sanchez, he hit his first homer the other day, and he had at least a hit today that I saw. So, you know, the lineup is longer. It is more formidable. I guess the thing I didn't really bank on, and you know, you said it right at the top, obviously this isn't something that we can count on as being sustainable all season long, but it's just been the improvement of the guys that have come back from last year and, you know, doing what they've been doing. The Bryce Turangs, you know, you mentioned Christian Yelich, William Contreras has been tearing the cover off the ball. Blake Perkins, you know, a guy that I certainly did not have penciled in making the opening day lineup at the start of spring training. And here he is, a key member of this offense. Joey Ortiz has been hitting when he's been in there. Really, it's been very fun to watch. They've been doing it in a way that we're not really used to seeing from the Craig Council years. They're playing aggressively. They're stealing bases like crazy. They're dropping down bunts, but they're also hitting homers too. So, you know, we always talk about offense being contagious, and it really seems like that has been the case so far. And I will just say from a selfish standpoint, a personal standpoint, after watching the last 5 years of just brutal offense at times, this is fun to watch. This has been really fun to watch. And there are guys like Garrett Mitchell who still have not taken the field yet, who you would figure would factor right in as well with the style of play that they have too. So, so far so good. It's been fun to watch. And I think Brewer fans would definitely agree that this offense is easily the story of the season to this point.
Blake Perkins is a really interesting one to me. Now, it's easy to forget that last year was his first time in the big leagues. You know, the Brewers brought him over here. It was kind of a surprise sort of major league addition right off the bat, a guy who didn't have any, you know, any experience when the Brewers signed him to that big league contract. And, you know, he didn't have a great year offensively. I mean, that's being kind, quite honestly, but he clearly was a guy that they added for his defense. His center field defense is so smooth. You know, we're kind of talking about Lorenzo Cain redux right here, the way that he is able to patrol center field. Now, the offense that he has provided thus far this season, you know, 2 homers, couple stolen bases, and you know there's a lot more where that came from. OPS well over 1. We know that's probably not going to happen, but there is a chance that he takes a big step forward offensively. And I think what's so funny is the Brewers came into this season with so many center field options. You mentioned Garrett Mitchell, who got hurt. Jackson Churio, who probably isn't ready defensively to be a center fielder, more of a right fielder for now. Sal Frelick, who was tested out at third base, but, you know, he's a center fielder and has been playing there. Joey Weimer, who is now back with the team, who was called up, who had struggled a little bit offensively last year and kind of to start this year as well in the minors. We have to wait and see if he'll be able to stay in the big league lineup. But all those guys, and it's Blake Perkins who is their best center fielder right now. And I think the guy that has to be playing, I don't know if that's a commitment to the full-fledged season. You know, I don't think you could say that. But, you know, we're talking about a switch hitter with speed, tremendous defense, and the offense right now is humming along. I think he's your starting center fielder until further notice, right? I know they love Sal Frelick out there. They'll find a spot for him. They can get him in the lineup. I feel like Blake Perkins is your guy, right, going forward, at least in the short term?
I mean, ride the hot hand, right? And after, I think that was it Wednesday night's game when Blake Perkins hit the home run? I can't remember, but you know, he essentially said after the game that, you know, this is a guy that's earned playing time, and he felt bad that he hadn't been able to get him in more regularly. When you produce like that, it's hard to take a guy out. And to me, this is Blake Perkins is a real scouting success for the Brewers. You know, if people remember back, he was the first offseason acquisition after the 2022 season ended. Signed him to a major league deal, and everybody's like, who is this guy? He never played in the majors before. It kind of bounced around in the minors with the Yankees and the Royals. Nationals, he was a high draft pick of the Nationals. It never really panned out. And, you know, gets his chance last year, gets his cup of coffee in the big leagues and showed he could do some good things. And, you know, this year I think it's just a case of a guy who's matured a little bit more, gotten a little bit more confidence and showing what he can do. So hats off to the Brewers for unearthing Blake Perkins and getting a guy that, you know, is proving he's not just a fringe roster player. This is a guy who can be a real contributor. And like, you know, you touched on it. The defense is there, most certainly. He can play all three outfield positions. He's a switch hitter. He's got a little bit of pop. He's got speed and just, you know, a good clubhouse guy. So just a tremendous fit all the way around. And it's been a cool story to watch unfold as his career has progressed.
The Brewers started the week in Cincinnati. Even in their loss, they went behind 8-0, rallied back. It was a 9-8 game, a deficit of 9-8 at one point. They did end up losing that game, but even the losses this week were kind of encouraging. And then to fast forward to the end of the week, they face off with old friend Corbin Burnes, who I don't know if you'd call that his sharpest outing necessarily, but he still threw some pretty dang good pitches, and the Brewers hit him pretty well. William Contreras with a bomb of a home run to dead center on the second pitch Corbin Burnes threw, just wild stuff. You know, Joey Ortiz got a triple off of him. Ortiz and DL Hall are the players who were traded to Milwaukee in that deal that sent Corbin Burnes to Baltimore. I'm curious. It's too early to evaluate the trade. We absolutely know that the trade was made with the big picture in mind, not just 2024. Joey Ortiz and DL Hall could be a big part of what's going forward. As you look at that trade, you know, just to revisit it briefly, how do you feel about that trade? You know, like DL Hall has started out slowly, but is probably going to be in the rotation if he can maybe figure some things out. Joey Ortiz has looked really good out of the gate defensively, offensively. How does that trade stack up to you? Some of it still got to be really speculative because we're so early into their careers with the Brewers. But, you know, now that this point where they got to face off with Burnes again, what do you think of thinking about that deal?
Yeah, again, it is definitely too early. I would say of what we've seen so far, the early returns have been mostly positive. I think that maybe the thing that surprised a lot of people about DL Hall is I talked to Jim Henderson the other day in Cincinnati, and you know, everybody was remembering the guy out of the bullpen down the stretch for the Orioles who was throwing 97, 98. That's not what we're seeing so far. You know, this is a guy that's throwing 91, 92, 93. Obviously, we have to keep in mind, you know, you can't, as a starting pitcher, there are very, very few guys that have that, can carry that kind of velo from the start of a start to the end. And he's kind of feeling his way a little bit. New team, new organization, new surroundings, first time in a starting rotation as a regular. So there's definitely going to be growing pains there. I do know that the Brewers are really enamored with his competitiveness and the ability to kind of learn on the fly a little bit. And Pat Murphy's been extolling so much praise on William Contreras so far, just in the way he's been calling ball games behind the plate. And that's especially valuable for a young guy like DL Hall, who really has not been through the battles yet. You know, to have a guy like William Contreras back there calling the pitches, you know, controlling the running game the way he's been doing, it's you know, made for a really good battery every time he's been out there. So, you know, I would say that, you know, the Brewers are certainly happy with DL Hall and Joey Ortiz, you know, been kind of in and out of the lineup. But what we've seen so far has really been, you know, what the billing was when he came over from Baltimore, which was really slick glove, great throwing arm, you know, kind of a slasher at the plate. He had a couple of triples in Baltimore. You know, he's got some power potential. We saw that last year in the minor leagues when he was with Baltimore. So, you know, those two guys, I think the Brewers are definitely looking at as future building blocks. And then don't discount the draft pick that the Brewers got as well. You know, the Brewers have had really good luck last several years. They've drafted very well, and that's a very valuable pick. So that's something to keep in mind as well. That's another big piece of the puzzle, I think, for the Brewers moving forward, and we'll see how they utilize that. You know, maybe they go a guy like a Tyler Black, an advanced college bat or something like that, at a position of need, where perhaps in a couple years the guy could be in the big leagues, or, you know, extrapolate out and they take a high school arm or something like that. But it's just always nice to have another option in the draft to be able to add more top shelf talent to what you already have.
Yeah. Fair to point out, they probably would have gotten a draft pick if Burns had left in free agency, but they push it up a year because of the deal. So they can kind of get started on a plan to move forward with DL Hall. Coming back to him a little bit, because we haven't seen that electric fastball, and when the velocity has not been there on the fastball, but more than that, the command hasn't been there. Do you see him as a starter long term? I think that's probably a fair question to ask. Even after 3 to 4 starts with him, you sort of see that this isn't the reliever, like you said. This isn't that like high level electricity guy. He's fighting through it. Obviously, everybody involved wants him to be a starter, but how do you think this plays out? I mean, do you worry when you see the fastball? Not, you know, it isn't this electric thing that I think a lot of people were dreaming on, at least in the role that he's playing as a starter. Do you think it's possible that he can sort of get back up to speed with that, even if he's, you know, not throwing 98 miles an hour?
Yeah, I asked Jim Henderson that, and he said, absolutely. That's something that you're going to continue to see improve as the season goes along. And, you know, the Brewers have committed to him as a starter, and they'd love to see him be a starter. You know that in your back pocket, you always have that relief role as a possibility. So you give him every opportunity to prove that he can't do it before, you know, going that next route. And obviously he had success doing that with the Orioles. You pretty much could pencil him in probably for similar results with the Brewers if they were to move him to the bullpen. But you got to give him some time. You know, I think this, it's kind of, you know, it kind of defines what this rotation really is, aside from Freddie Peralta. It's a bunch of guys that you got to give some time to, you got to give some starts to, and just see how they gel and how they, you know, come together as a unit. And we've already got those moving pieces with Jacob Junis on the injured list. You know, I think Robert Gasser most certainly would have been up in the majors already had he not had that bone spur in his elbow.
Absolutely.
You know, so I believe he pitched over the weekend in a minor league extended spring training game, I'm sorry, in Arizona. So luckily for the Brewers and for Robert Gasser, it sounds like that's not a long-term issue. And maybe he gets back into the mix here before too long. But, you know, give the guy a chance. Give he's still young. You know, this is what, career start number 4 under his belt now after the start against the Orioles on Saturday. So, you know, let's see if he can string together maybe some more consistent outings. The command has been the key with him. That's why part of the reason why the Orioles did not utilize him as a starter, just was not able to find the zone consistently. you know, I think that has definitely been an issue here so far with the Brewers, but again, way too early to draw conclusions.
Really a great week for the starting pitching. Joe Ross had an outstanding outing for his first win since 2021. Wade Miley returns from injury and kept the team in the game through his, it was an abbreviated stint, four innings like we knew it would be, but he did his part, you know, typical Miley outing. And Colin Ray, man, I feel like every time we talk about Colin Ray, it's like, yeah, they got Colin Ray in the rotation, you know, to fill it out, fourth guy, fifth guy. Well, he is not pitching like a fourth guy or a fifth guy. He's become one of the most reliable things on this baseball team. He just goes out, gives up two runs in five, maybe six innings, and puts your team in position to win. So a great round through for the starting rotation this week. I do want to ask about Christian Yelich, because you mentioned some injuries, and there's some others on the farm that I want to mention too. But the Yelich injury, of course, is a tough one. I mean, I think, Todd, Christian Yelich, like, he was swinging the bat better than we have seen since the year 2019. I mean, even as good as he was last year, and he was pretty solid, this is another level for him. I mean, he's pounding sliders out of the ballpark. That's not something he can do even at his best with consistency. I mean, few people can. And he's just seeing the baseball beautifully right now. Everything is hit hard. He really looks like he's kind of the peak version of himself that you can expect at this stage of his career. And then he goes out with a back injury. He misses the last two games of the Baltimore series. I would imagine it's not going to be a lot of time down, because the Brewers did make some roster moves on Sunday. They brought Joey Weimer up, presumably to fill some of that time with Yelich gone, but they did not put Yelich on the injured list. So they think, I assume, that he's going to play possibly on this, you know, brief homestand with San Diego. But when you heard about the back injury, what goes through your mind? I mean, I don't know if I know you weren't there, you know, in Baltimore, but do you have any thoughts about Christian Yelich being down and how this team can work around it?
You know, positives and negatives. Obviously, the back has been an issue for Yelich for a number of years now with the Brewers, and it's something that, unfortunately for him and the Brewers, as he gets older, he's on the wrong side of 30. It's going to be something that's going to continue to be an issue, most likely, and he's going to have to deal with. On the bright side, it's something that he has dealt with, the Brewers have dealt with, and it seems like, looking at the prior flare-ups that he's had, they've been able to come up with a good treatment plan for him. They, you know, they listen to him and they go by his word as far as what works for him and what he needs to get back to feeling good enough to play. But the downside is that, like you said, he's off to this tremendous start, and here we are, you know, 2 weeks into the season, and we're already talking about his back, and, you know, is it going to be an IL situation, that sort of thing. That's not good. That certainly doesn't bode well. If I remember right, several years ago, he had a flare up of his back early in the season, and then wound up missing time later in the season as well. Last year, they kind of shut him down right toward the end when the playoffs were pretty much in the bag at that point, and they're kind of resting him up. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of Monday's meetings with him and the medical staff, what they determine is going to be best. They do have Joey Weimer up, as you mentioned, so they have some outfield depth if they feel like they need to put him on the IL and get that squared away. You know, from a momentum standpoint, certainly you would like to keep him active, I think, and hope for the best and that back settles down a little bit, because with the way the offense is performed, it's been tremendous. And to have Yelich right in the middle of it all and driving the ball the way he has been, that's ideal for the Brewers. So just a watch and wait and watch thing, and we will see in the coming days. But, you know, as I said, it's certainly not a good omen, I would think, 2 weeks into the season to already be talking about and worrying about that back situation.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy indicated that with the loss of Devin Williams, that there wasn't going to be a closer per se. And then Abner Uribe was still kind of that guy in the early going. At least, you know, you could maybe, if it wasn't closer in name, it felt pretty close to that. We saw him in the seventh inning on Sunday, and he had a rough outing, and that's been a little bit of a trend. He has not been smooth thus far. I think it's fair to say, and I think everyone knows it, he's still a work in progress. He's still a very young guy. There's going to be ups and downs. Even at his best, he's got control problems every once in a while. He's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be perfect every time out there. We're not there yet with him. What do you see with him? I mean, he again was in the seventh, so Pat Murphy making good on that. You know, he wasn't going to pitch Abner Uribe strictly for the ninth. Seems like Joel Piamp was going to maybe take that role over for the time being. What do you see when you think of Abner Uribe? Do you feel like, you know, do you feel like he's really fighting it, or it's just, you know, just here and there patchiness, and he's still going to be pretty dominant time to time? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would still guess that he will get the lion's share of opportunities, save opportunities as they pop up, depending on the usage of other guys as well. But young guy going through it, another guy that has command issues at times. And I think that they just have to kind of let him battle his way through it. You know, we saw it a little bit last year. Obviously, he wasn't on the spot as much as he is right now with Devin Williams on the shelf with that back injury. So you just got to kind of let him roll a little bit. I feel like Piamps is a good second option, but, you know, relievers are so, as we well know, and Doug Melvin said this all the time, it's like this, right? You know, like 1 year really good, 1 year not so good. And you just feel like a guy like Piamps, who's coming off this tremendous career season that he had and all the usage, that, you know, maybe he's due for a little bit of a downslide this year. Another guy you could maybe put into that is Holby Milner, you know, coming off of two really good years, you know, not off to a great start so far. And I realize he's not in the closer conversation, but, you know, just saying that there's a high degree of variability in the bullpen. And when you're talking about a young guy, very little experience and a hard thrower who has command issues at times, and Abner Uribe, there's going to be even that much more variability and flammability, frankly. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch how that all unfolds and how Pat Murphy kind of maneuvers that back end of the bullpen. That was one of the things that Craig Counsell was so good at 2018, 2019. We'll see if Pat Murphy has that same touch.
Yeah, I think there are still some concerns with the bullpen. JB Bukauskas, who looked pretty good, he goes on the injured list on Sunday. You know, that sounds like that could be a lengthy injury. It's, you know, I don't know if we have full details on that, but that could be tough. And, you know, you mentioned that there's a lot of up and down. Hobie Milner, Bryce Wilson, like these are guys who were pretty solid last year, you know, fighting it a little bit early on. You're going to have that. Not everybody's going to be clicking at the same time. And they've still gotten some really great stuff out of guys like Thiago Vieira and Brian Hudson in multiple inning relief roles. It's really helped things go along smoothly. But, you know, when the bullpen is being asked to get six innings a night, not six, but five or four, you're going to run into this a little bit. Before we get to three up, three down, man, what a rough week in the minor leagues. I mean, you mentioned Robert Gasser actually getting on the mend here. That's a positive sign for one of the top prospects in the organization. But otherwise, brutal, brutal stuff. We learned that Jefferson Caro, who injured himself, I want to say in the first night of the season, second night of the season, diving back into first base, has a bad shoulder injury. He's going to miss the entire season. Not a loss for the major league team because you've got two catchers and, you know, William Contreras and Gary Sanchez, but Caro's next. I mean, he's a top five prospect in the organization, and now he's going to miss an entire year of development. Brock Wilkin, the third base prospect, first pick last year, hit in the face. Facial fractures, going to need surgery, going to miss at least a month. Terrible blow. That's a guy who I thought would be on track to play in Milwaukee at some point by the end of this season. That's ambitious, but it's still possible. But, you know, he's going to miss a ton of time. And Cooper Pratt, one of the darlings of the draft this past year, he broke a pinky finger on a stolen base attempt down in Carolina. You know, he's not a guy who's going to play this year in the big leagues, but man, you just hate to see this stuff pile up. So I don't know if any of that stuff jumps out at you as more concerning than others. Brewers have had a pretty good start to their minor league season. A lot of interesting names popping up, having really great performances. But man alive, they have no luck in the injury portion, major or minor league this season. Anything about those names jump out at you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Pratt thing, it is what it is. You know, he'll recover, I would think, relatively quickly. But, you know, the Caro situation, really bad. This is his second shoulder surgery already at age 21. Unfortunately for him, this one is his throwing shoulder. And for a guy whose throwing arm is one of his biggest tools, not good. You feel bad for the guy, and you can't help but go back to 2017, was that, with Jimmy Nelson diving back into first base. You can't blame guys because it's an instinctual play and it's baseball, and you know, you're caught up in the moment, but Brewers have been a little bit snake bit when it comes to that kind of stuff. And then Brock Wilkin getting hit in the face, man. I didn't see a replay of it. I heard it hit him kind of like right on the, I don't know if it was the C flap or the ear flap, or that must have been the C flap. But just think how much worse it could have been if he didn't have that C flap too. You know, maybe a season ender, who knows? So it stinks that he's going to miss some time in the short term, but I would think that long term, probably not too many repercussions. And as you mentioned, that's a guy that the Brewers really have high hopes for, and I think have penciled in at some point, maybe even 2025, as being their regular third baseman, big strapping young guy. Certainly fits the bill physically there. So yeah, some bad breaks for sure. Pun unintended there.
Yeah, shattered the flap on that
helmet, yeah, I believe. Yeah. So just kind of the way it is. That's professional sports, that's baseball, and stuff like that happens. All you can do is really hope for quick recovery for those guys, and they can move past it and continue to develop.
All right, let's move into some of the more granular details from the week that was. It is our weekly segment, Three Up, Three Down. New music effects this week, Todd. Very exciting moment where we change things up a little bit. New music. Do you want to go first? I'm happy to cede that to you if you'd like.
No, you go ahead. Feel free.
All right. Let's go back to the first day of the week, Monday, when Ellie De La Cruz, I feel like he's personally attacking the Brewers. Ellie De La Cruz, for as exciting as he is, quite honestly, his numbers were not great last year overall. He did steal three bases in one inning against the Brewers. He did make some exciting plays happen against the Brewers. He just torments the Brewers. He hits a 450-foot home run to dead center, absolute tank, and then he gets an inside-the-park home run. Self-relic did not read it right, should not have dove for the ball, but he does. It gets past him, and De La Cruz motors around. Those were the two runs that made the difference in that game. The Reds beat the Brewers 10-8. Man, Self-relic, tough scene there, but, like, doesn't it feel like Ellie De La Cruz is just – he's amazing against the Brewers, and then the rest of the league maybe has something figured out, but that guy's just dazzling against Milwaukee. Very frustrating. They were able to, I guess, keep him in check, given that they won the next two games in Cincinnati, but man alive, he does some special stuff, Todd.
Yeah, we had Adam McAlvey and I were talking about that, and we asked Pat Murphy a couple times after the games down in Cincinnati. It just seems like he has an effect on the Brewers in terms of he's so good and he's so talented and he's so fast and so explosive that he just speeds the defense up. You know, they rush. I think they panic a little bit. Maybe the pitchers are trying a little bit too hard. And, William Contreras had a good quote that, like, you know, we just have to realize he's human. He's just another player, granted a very good one, but for a young guy like that to already be in the Brewers' heads when you know you're going to be seeing him for how many more years in the division, not necessarily good. But I think it'll all even out in the end. The Brewers will play the Reds a million more times, and Ellie De La Cruz will have his games where he strikes out four times as well. But if you just pull the camera back and you just look at the player and just, wow, he's amazing to watch. He's so fun to watch because he's so electric. He's so fast, throws the ball so hard, hits the ball so hard. He's really a special, special player. And, a guy that really kind of came out of nowhere. You know, there wasn't much expected of him. And he's just a guy that, you know, kind of blossomed and now look at what the Reds have. So yeah, it's always fun to cover a series with when he's playing. And he certainly did not disappoint down there in Cincinnati.
All right. Do you have one for Three Up, Three Down? Or?
Sure. I will go with the 1,000th player.
The saga.
Still waiting. We're still waiting. So Kevin Hergett gets called up in Cincinnati, and we talked to him about, you could be the 1,000th player in franchise history. And he thought that was funny. And, he could be a trivia question. And lo and behold, he's sent out the next day when Wade Miley is reinstated from the injured list. And then Jared Kanen gets called up and he has yet to pitch. Who knows what the future holds for him. So we are still awaiting the 1,000th player in Brewer history to take the field. Maybe it will be Kanen. Maybe it will be somebody else, but just kind of a funny little note to keep following until it actually happens.
History waits with bated breath. Hergit got dropped from the 40-man roster on Sunday, so he's not coming back. It's a wild turn of events. Goes from 1K to off the roster altogether. My number two, there was a little bit of a dust-up in Baltimore, a little bit of a mini brawl between the Brewers and the Orioles. And honestly, I think the root cause here is that Baltimore, that thing in left field, the fence is being pushed back where homers just go to die. Willie Adames hit one that was a home run, but it landed in the first row. And he Cadillac'd it a little bit because he thought it was an absolute bomb that was going to get out by plenty. And it didn't. It barely got out, which is fine. That's how it is in Baltimore in the left field wall. And then I think what happened is some of the Baltimore Orioles took offense to the way that he sort of casually strolled to first base. And it became a thing and the benches sort of emptied and it was like fake fighting again, which is commonplace in Major League Baseball. But that wall, man, it causes problems. Rhys Hoskins has hit a couple shots, I think, in that Baltimore series that I think would have been home runs in normal human American ballparks. But you know what? The Brewers still were able to get a lot. Gary Sanchez hit a bomb over that wall. So like they were still able to make it work for them. The power numbers were not lacking, but I think that wall caused a brawl, Todd. That's my thesis.
Well, Willie also missed a home run in Cincinnati. That one, I think, was it Stuart Fairchild who reached up and grabbed one in right field.
Amazing catch.
Pulled that one back, too. So he missed out on a couple this last week. Even still, Willie's swinging the bat really well, which is a good thing to see for the Brewers, obviously. And, he's another key part of that offense and a part of the reason why the offense has been playing so well this season to this point. So. Kind of funny. I remember when we were in Baltimore a couple years ago, that was the first 2022. I think that was the first year that they had moved that wall back and kind of built it up a little bit. And that was the conversation amongst the offensive players at that time. And it seems like the conversation has not changed at all. So I know the pitchers enjoy it, but the hitters, not so much.
All right. My number three, Jesse Winker. Todd, Jesse Winker, a little bit vilified last year, signed by the Brewers, by the Brewers. It did not go well. He had a horrendous offensive season, spent some time in the minors, was hurt a little bit coming off of neck surgery. It sure seems like the neck surgery was a bigger deal than maybe he thought it was, or the team thought it was, or we thought it was. I don't know. But he is off to a torrid start with the Washington Nationals this year. I was surprised he even made the roster, to be completely honest. I was doubly surprised that he was even hitting cleanup on opening day for another Major League Baseball franchise. And you know what? He deserves to be hitting cleanup. He's got 15 hits already. He's got a home run, which matches his total from last year, for those who remember. He's got 3 RBIs, stolen a couple bases. Jesse Winker has 2 stolen bases.
Wow. I never would have guessed that.
It's just wild. That's like Rhys Hoskins stealing bases. He's got a 982 OPS, 44 at-bats. Obviously, the caveat applies. Take it for what it is. But holy smokes, Jesse Winker is back to being a very good Major League Baseball player, at least for the time being. Did not see that coming. Wild turn of events out in Washington.
Yeah, good for him. I mean, I know he was a whipping boy of Brewer fans because he did not perform. He didn't perform nearly to what everybody had expected last year, but you know, the guy had a disc replaced in his neck. I mean, come on, you know, maybe it was on the Brewers they were a little bit too overly optimistic regarding the recovery time or, you know, how long it takes to get back to 100% from a surgery like that. But obviously that was pretty major. But, you know, Winker, by all accounts, was a good guy. He tried, you know, he wasn't a bad guy in the clubhouse or anything. So good for him, you know, like the Nationals have a couple of reclamation projects. Eddie Rosario is playing center field for them. So, you know, probably best case scenario for them, they sign those guys, they have good first halves, and they try to ship them off at the deadline and try to turn them for something. So, but hey, absolutely, good for him. 2 stolen bases. I never would have guessed that at all.
All right. Close.
I was going to say for my last one, I was going to bring up Jake Bowers. And you know, granted, he's only hitting 161, and the reason the Brewers signed him, obviously, was for his left-handed bat, kind of, you know, not necessarily be a platoon guy at first base with Rhys Hoskins, but give him an option there. I think he's played more than probably anybody would have expected, not necessarily so much for the way he's hitting the ball, but defensively, he's just been amazing.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, like watching a a gold glover over there. The way he's been able to pick those short hops, and say what you will about Rowdy, obviously did not have the greatest lateral movement, but he was really good at those short hops at first base, and he made his infielders look good. You know, Jake Bowers is doing that. Plus, he's showing tremendous lateral range. He's just sucking everything up over there. And on a team, again, that it's not just lip service. The Brewers expect their guys to defend their positions and defend them well. He's been tremendous over there. So we'll see over the course of the season if he can, you know, contribute more regularly offensively. But it's a great move right now just for the fact that he's a guy that you can put over there late in games if you started Hoskins at first base and feel good, you know, defensively that he's going to get the job done over there. So, again, hats off to the Brewers for their scouting, because that's he's been a really nice addition so far, I think.
Hit a monster 3-run homer on Saturday that gave the Brewers the lead that, like you alluded to. And, you know, that scooping, Rhys Hoskins doesn't come in with the reputation as being a phenomenal defensive player. I think, unfortunately, we have seen that. If you're a Brewers fan, it's been rough. It was a particularly bad in that first game that they lost to Cincinnati. He really struggled over there. And I think, you know, when you have a defense like this, when you have Bryce Turang, Willy Adames, Joey Ortiz, they're getting to a ton of baseballs that nobody else is getting to, and they're getting them on the run, and they've got to force throws and throw off their back foot. You're going to need somebody who can be a Hoover over there at first base. And they seem to have that. Like you said, maybe that's a defensive replacement. Maybe that's a guy who plays first base while Rhys Hoskins serves as a designated hitter. That seems to be a formula that's working for them. Probably will have to hit a little bit more to maintain that spot, like you mentioned, but very encouraging stuff over there. This team is built on defense. That's how they built this team. And I got to think that was part of the equation with Jake Bowers. And the home run, obviously, is also a big part of what they're looking for as well. That'll do it for 3 Up, 3 Down. A couple things we did not mention. We talked a little bit about that Gary Sanchez home run. He has struggled to start the season, had an offer going to start the year, his first hit of the year, an absolute bomb over that Baltimore that we were talking about. So that's a nice start, a nice first hit for him as a Brewer. Jackson Holliday was the story in that first series in Baltimore. It was his home debut, top prospect in baseball. The Brewers kind of rendered him in, you know, pretty much a non-issue, struck him out 5 times, but he did get his first hit on Sunday, and that contributed to a Baltimore rally that allowed them to take the lead. So a cool moment for Baltimore fans. Brewers fans kind of already had that moment with Jackson Churio, their Jackson, their top prospect Jackson. So Jackson Holliday will be much better than he fared against the Brewers as his major league career progresses. All right, let's go back in time. It's time for our weekly history segment. It is Remember When. Todd, I was trying to find something connecting to the 1989 Brewers season, something that really jumped out, because that is the last time the Brewers went on an offensive tear where they went 6 straight games with 7 runs or more. What do you think about when you think about the 89 season? That's kind of a weird one. 81 and 81, there were some great players, some interesting subplots, I guess. What do you have any relationship to the 1989 season growing up in the Milwaukee area?
You know, it's funny you ask me that, because that was really, I would say, probably the wheelhouse of my Brewer fandom. I was a senior in high school that year. I was an avid autograph collector, huge baseball fan. So I spent literally all of my summers in 88, 89 at the ballpark at County Stadium. So tons of autographs, tons of stories, meeting tons of guys. It was a lot of fun. Those were fun teams to watch for me. Obviously, you had the Molitor Yount thing. You know, those guys were tremendous and, you know,
amazing,
all-time greats in franchise history. I loved watching them play. I was a huge Gary Sheffield fan. You know, like, it was just amazing to me that, you know, here's this guy that was like 2 years older than me, you know, maybe not even, who's playing in the major leagues and just like insanely talented. I couldn't wrap my mind around that. Greg Vaughn was just coming up. Guys like that, Joey Meyer, you know, Rob Deer. It was a fun team. You know, like, it didn't translate obviously into wins. You know, they were right around average. You know, the pitching was not very good, but it was a fun team to watch. There were a lot of names on that team. And just a great summer for me down there. So maybe I'm getting a little too misty here, but it just, those are the good old days for me as far as Brewers baseball goes, even if it wasn't translated into success on the field.
Yeah. Love a nostalgia trip from one Todd Rosiak. So they were 500, 81 and 81. That is the season where Robin Yount wins MVP. He was, interestingly enough, not an all-star that year, not on the all-star team, but he does win MVP. It was a pretty close vote, actually. He barely beat out Ruben Sierra, Cal Ripken, George Bell, all of whom had more than 200 points in the voting. Yount, I think, had 256. He was a .318 hitter, .896 OPS, stole a bunch of bases, drove in 100 runs. A pretty solid year. I don't know if anything truly jumps out, but he was like in the top 10 of every offensive category. So even though they were 81 and 81 for the first time in a while, I think it had been like 7 or 8 seasons since a player not on one of the top two teams in a division had won MVP. He was 34. He was about to be a free agent, so that was a big deal. He was one of now 3 players to win MVP at multiple positions because he had won it as a shortstop in 1982. Now he's a center fielder in 1989. So that's a big story. You know, oddly enough, Paul Molitor was incredible the last month of the season. Absolutely on fire the last month of the season. He hit .495 in September going into the final 2 games of the year. Just ridiculous. Well over, it was a .509 on base percentage. Surprised actually that didn't steal some votes away from Yount for the MVP because Molitor was so good at the end. But the game I wanted to focus in on, you mentioned Joey Meyer. This is during that streak of 6 straight wins, 7 runs or more. All were on the West Coast. These were Seattle, California, Oakland. And they scored 7 runs exactly in all 6 of these games. They hit on 7 all 6 games, which is very funny that this is the streak that the Brewers were on going into Sunday. But the fifth of these 6 games is in Seattle. It's a 7-1 win, pretty unremarkable, but it's important to me because as a fan of big people, as a fan of the bigger athletes, this is the game where Joey Meyer stole his one and only career base. He had singled into the corner. I love that sentence because that just feels very right. Singled into the corner at Kingdome in Seattle. That allowed the score to be tied. And then with runners at the quarters, the Brewers try to squeeze with Charlie O'Brien, who's their backup catcher at the time. It goes to the backstop, sails to the backstop. Greg Vaughn scores. Joey Meyer gets to second because they were running, because it was a squeeze. He gets credit for a stolen base. It was not really a stolen base, but he got credit for it. My delightful 6'3", 260-pound friend Joey Meyer gets his first and only stolen base of his career. Brewers score 4 runs in that inning without a hit because O'Brien gets hit by a pitch. They load the bases with Mike Felder. Gus Polidor tries to squeeze with Joey Meyer on third base. I don't know what happened there, but Polidor managed to get the bunt down even though it was a pitch out, and Meyer, the wording in the paper, the Milwaukee Journal, was Meyer thundered across the plate, which I can picture very clearly. A balk followed, then a sacrifice fly. And you know what? All these runs are coming against Randy Johnson, who, of course, is a future Hall of Famer, future Cy Young guy. Brewers faced Corbin Burns, Cy Young guy. I thought that might be a tie. So just kind of a relatively inconsequential game, but love some of the details there. 1989 season had its ups and downs, had a lot of Molitor in the out. Dan Plesac had a good year. Teddy Higuera was kind of hurt that year. You know, it just didn't quite click into place, but still a fun season a little bit, I think, for Todd Rosiak.
I called up the roster. I was just kind of curious looking at some of these other names. So also position players who were on that team at some point during that season: Terry Francona.
Yes.
You mentioned Gus Polidor, George Canale, Ed Romero was still around, Billy Bates.
Mm-hmm.
Lavelle Freeman, he was a big prospect who, like, never, I think he only played a few games that year, and that was pretty much it. Never
Greg
really
Brock is on there.
Greg Brock. Yep. And then looking at some of the pitchers here, there's 2 that I have absolutely no recollection of. One is Ray Krawcheck, and another guy named Jeff Paterick or Peterick.
Jeff Paterick. Yeah, I remember him.
No, absolutely no recollection of him at all. But then you had Brian Clutterbuck.
Yeah, he got
Jerry
hurt.
Jerry Royce, who looked like he was about 73 years old. He was 40 at that point.
Don August was on that team.
Yeah, Don August. Tony Faustus. He was only 31. He looked like he was 51, and the way he threw, he looked like he was 51 too. So, yeah,
just 1980 baseball is a different animal.
Yeah, for sure. But great, again, great memories. Those teams, 88, 89, 90, will always have my heart, and I will go to my grave saying that those, I think it was at 90. That era uniform will be my all-time favorite. The home pinstripes with the Brewers inscript across the chest, and then the road gray is with the Milwaukee inscript across the chest.
Yeah.
The best.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, and although I wasn't hunting for autographs, young J.R. Radcliffe is making his first Brewers memories in 1989, 1990, going to his first game. I believe I saw Rick Sutcliffe pitch for the Orioles at one point. That might have been like 91, 92. I don't know, but it's all happening. It's all starting here. All right, that's enough of that. Let's stay in the present. Todd, it's time for your weekly take of the week.
Take of the week. Take it away, Todd. I think Jackson Chourio deserves a hat tip just for the way he started his career. I will be the first to admit, I said at the start of spring training, he's not going to make the opening day roster. He's going to struggle in the spring. They're going to have to send him down for a few more at-bats, a little bit more seasoning. Wrong on that. Comes out of the chute, hitting. Has not looked supernatural in right field, and we do have to give him some grace there because he's never really played right field before, but he's made all the plays thus far. He has not looked overwhelmed. He has not looked overmatched. He's kept his head on his shoulders. He's done some really good things already. Hit his first couple home runs. We've seen the speed. So to this point, you know, again, long season, I understand that. But the first couple weeks for a guy that I would have expected to be really, frankly, overwhelmed and overmatched, he's been anything but that. So now the next challenge for him is going to be to maintain that level. He's going to have dips here and there, but you try to avoid those prolonged slumps. You certainly don't want to see him going into something like Joey Weimer did last year, or Bryce Terang, where they just get buried at the plate and can't get out of it. That certainly would not be good, but it's realistically a possibility. And what do you do then? You reset, you send him back to Nashville, you get him feeling good again, and you bring him back up. So there's going to be ups and downs along the way with him, but to me, so far, so good.
Wasn't in the lineup on Sunday, but continues to, if nothing else, flash that speed, whether it's on defense or beating out an infield single. You know, you can use that skill until, you know, the harder contact comes along and you start driving the ball into the corners or over the wall. We haven't seen that from Chourio consistently yet, but we might. You know, he, like you said, not overmatched. It has been a good start. All right, Todd, I think that's all we got. Anything else before I send you off into the ether?
It was just good to get some Skyline chili in me while I was down in Cincinnati. That was a positive. It's a very polarizing food, very, very polarizing restaurant. People either love it or hate it. And I am in the love category. It was a great visit for me, except for when the waitress dumped a bunch of chili in my lap as she was serving me and I was wearing gray sweatpants. So that didn't go so awesome. But Adam McAlvey complimented me for keeping my cool, and I was able to get the chili out, which was good. But good old four-way, and the first time in a couple years I've had it, and I was glad that I went. So
two thumbs up from Todd Rosiak.
Yeah, what's for lunch? That was it. Skyline.
Yeah, and you're wearing it on top of it. That's commitment. That's commitment to the lunch.
Yep.
He is Todd Rosiak. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. He'll be covering the Brewers, of course, this week. They start with three games against the San Diego Padres, and then they go to St. Louis to face the rival Cardinals. That'll get going on, what is that, Friday? Yeah, Friday through the weekend, and then they do get that off day on Thursday in between. Todd, thank you for joining us this week. We will chat with you again very soon.
JR, always a pleasure.
Indeed. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. If you're watching us on YouTube, like and subscribe and all that. Thank you for looking at our smiling faces there on YouTube. We will chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye.